Hello and welcome to this episode of The Walk Podcast. My name's Alex Brownsell and I'm the head of content for Walk Media. Now in this episode, we're going to be tackling a frankly huge and potentially thorny question. What do we mean by media? In decades gone by, that was a fairly easy question to answer. It meant channels like TV, radio, publishing, out-of-home cinema, where advertising sat primarily alongside professionally produced and often regulated content. But digital has muddied the media waters and we're left with what we've previously on Walk described as a two-speed marketplace. This is where spending with, for instance, search and social platforms grows at a GDP-busting pace, but investments with those aforementioned channels stagnates and even, in some instances, decline. As I said, it is an issue that we've looked at on Walk, and it's one that was brilliantly articulated by Matt Hill, the Director of Research and Planning at Thinkbox, in a recent article that you may have seen on themedialeader.com. Now, I'm delighted to say that Matt joins us on today's podcast alongside James McDonald, Walk's Director of Data Intelligence and Forecasting, and all the way from Austin, Texas, Jackie Lyons, Head of Planning at Havas Media Network. Welcome all.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Right, Matt, let's just start with your article, because I'm sure some people will have read it, some people may not have read it. So for those that haven't, could you just give us a quick overview of the points you made and why you think this matters so much?
Yes, I can do my best to try and summarize it. But as you mentioned, it's been covered in by sort of Walk already in various guises. But it really, the thing that hit home to me was I got a report. It's a report from that GroupM produced called This Year, Next Year. And in there, I think they heavily actually base their numbers on the AA Walk data anyway. But they just presented the volume of investment for the UK, and they forecast across 2024. And they split it by producing sort of pie chart where they had one kind of circle for internet, which spanned search, retail media, and non-search online investment. And then they had lines for sort of TV, for radio. But like the blue part, which was spanning search, retail media, and internet, non-search, just like was everywhere. It's just everything. It was like 80% of spend, and everything else was crammed into this tiny corner. And I was like, that this what is this? This can't be right. And I went and I had a look at the AA Walk data, and sure enough, it matched it. And the reason why it really sort of struck me was because I'm quite lucky. We do a lot of work with sort of combining econometric data together across different brands and sort of looking at their spend patterns and understanding what's optimal. And it looks very, very different to this picture. And I'm thinking, why is this? You know, why is this so different? So in summary, I thought a really interesting way of looking at it would be to map it against total UK GDP. Volume of investment, so like relative to UK GDP, which is like £2 trillion or something, how much has been invested in advertising and how does that change over time? And what was immediately obvious was that it's really, really consistent for like the past 40 years. It's hovered around 1%, but over the last sort of 3-4 years it's suddenly accelerated, and we're in this situation where the overall economy is pretty poor. You know, we're not in a great place right now. We've got all these various things that are influencing the economy. Yet advertising seems to be better than ever, and it's growing and it's booming, and it's what's going on here. So I suppose that before I sort of just wang on too much, that was the starting point, was to say, to ask the question of why are we suddenly seeing this really, really healthy, buoyant advertising economy when the overall economy isn't so good? And what's happening in terms of what's driving that growth, and why is it all going to the online players?
Just to my second question that I asked earlier, why does this matter? I mean, it's an interesting observation, but is it more than an observation? Is it something that actually marketing people, media people should care about?
What I go on to talk about in the article I wrote is that there's two big drivers behind the growth. One is search / retail media. So very pointy end of the funnel activity, and it's naturally going to grow because the more that people buy stuff online, the more that's being spent on e-commerce as a whole, then naturally advertisers are going to be spending more on capturing that demand that's out there. So the problem is, I think it's a different kind of advertising investment to what we sort of normally talk about, and it's coming from a different pot. So in the past, it would be sort of comparable to investing in a really good retail location. So buying at the corner of Oxford Circus is akin to buying, you know, all the most important, most valuable keywords in search, or buying a sponsored link on Amazon to be at the top of the page. It's digital real estate that you're paying for. So it's a different kind of advertising, but it's going in and being classed as advertising. And then the other thing is that we're capturing more and more SME spend in the data. So there's a huge number of SMEs out there. And I think it's brilliant that in a way, you know, digital advertising has democratized the ability to advertise. And I think that's a really strong thing, but that's a huge part of the growth. So those two things are sort of distorting the picture so that we're not really looking at the kind of businesses that sort of Jackie's working on day in, day out and talking to. We're sort of looking at a picture that's quite different from the reality. And the reason why I think this really matters and why it's dangerous is that those over total numbers just influence the perception, especially in the city, I think. We'll probably go on to talk about this, but I think that has sort of deep consequences in terms of the perception of the role for digital advertising, the growth of digital advertising, the importance for digital advertising, and sways the way that they see and the way they react to companies' behaviours. But also just it influences marketers because they're looking at where the growth is and they're going, oh, we're not growing at that rate. Should we be growing at that rate? So there's a kind of herding mechanic that's causing, I think, advertisers to increase their investment in a certain type of marketing in order to keep up with everybody else when what they're looking at isn't what they think they're necessarily looking at. So I think that's probably the biggest areas that I think are problematic.
Yeah, I there's a lot for us to unpack then. We'll come back to some of those points. But before we do, James, as somebody that crunches these numbers, that and for context, James, you lead the forecasting for the Advertising Association Walk expenditure report for the UK forecasts. What's your take on what Matt's just said? And are these points you kind of agree with or are there good reasons why it's done the way it's done?
The first thing I would say is Matt is absolutely right. There has been a notable disconnect between growth in the UK advertising market and GDP in recent years. As a forecaster, we tend to use economic growth and economic growth forecast as a leading indicator in regression analyses when we're sizing up future market spend. And for any nerds listening to the podcast, typically there is an R squared value of 0.7 between GDP and advertising spend, where one is a perfect correlation. So 0.7 is traditionally rather strong. That has completely dissipated in recent years. And to Matt's point, that is largely due to seemingly meteoric growth within certain corners of the online sector, particularly search, social media, and now retail media. So that does have implications for our industry as a whole. And I think that is why it's important to have this discussion. I think to the earlier point Matt made as well, around, you know, having a big pie of online figures here and then having another pie over in the corner doesn't really serve our industry particularly well. One of the benefits of a subscription to the expenditure report, not that I'm going to go into sales mode, but there are numerous ways to cut the data. And indeed, the clients ranging from the largest brands to agencies who have access to the full data set really look at the market in that kind of, big internet pile here and then different media over here. They kind of segment it according to their needs and their own media mix to make it more strategically viable. But in order to make those numbers strategically viable, having bloated totals, whatever formats they may be, doesn't really offer the kind of nuance that is required for day-to-day strategic planning. So I think there is a question there about how we look to segment large portions of the market or seemingly large portions of the market in ways that make more sense to industry so that we can be better informed. I should say, as a researcher, I'm fully in favour of anything that helps us to understand our world better. And so this could be one way in which we do that.
Just a quick follow-up there, James. You obviously speak to a lot of your peers, people working in similar areas of forecasting. Is this a kind of complaint or an issue that you've heard discussed previously and elsewhere, or is this a sort of new thing where over the last couple of years we have seen that divergence from norms in terms of percentage share of GDP?
Yeah, I think it's a global phenomenon, and that would follow because it's generally because of global media owners, you know. So it's generally seen within global media owners. So that is certainly something that's been tracked across the board. I think research in general, this might seem like a sweeping statement, but I think in the quest to kind of quantify things accurately, when there are nascent formats in our industry, which perhaps practitioners are quite quick to come into because they want to capitalize on new opportunities, the research field generally tends to lag that trend. So that there is generally a lag period where researchers will set up a methodology to measure that format. And in many instances, that results in corners of the market that just aren't adequately sized up. And again, going back to that point of nuance, I think that's kind of where a lot of the detail and the granularity can be lacking. And like I said, that's an international challenge, not just one in the UK.
Okay. Well, Jackie, I'm interested to know, as the voice of the advertiser on this podcast, no pressure. when you listen to these points and this debate, is this something that you think matters for your clients, or are we getting bogged down in the technicals?
I think it's a question of effectiveness, isn't it? So like our job as an agency is to make sure we're investing on behalf of our clients in the most effective way. And so we need to understand the different levers we're pulling within the mix of communications. And there's a broad mix. All of the channels we're talking about do different things on a plan. And we have to come to decisions which allow for balance and allow us to generate the best possible outcome for a client, depending on, you know, what their objective is. I mean, the growth in digital is undeniably tricky for us to manage within that conversation, because there's just such a fragmentation about all of the different ways you can use different channels and different formats, as you say. And, you know, that whole picture is getting murkier. And, you know, there's other work we could reference, like the work of Karen Nelson Field and Amplified Intelligence in this space. And without looking at GDP, she's looked at ESOV. And in a similar way, that correlation is going down over time, which was, you know, when I was growing up in the industry, one of those kind of rules of thumb in terms of how you grow a brand. And those connections are weakening as well. So from an effectiveness perspective, I think we do need to be like concerned about what we're seeing, because ultimately, if we're not investing in the right places, we're not really doing our job for our clients, are we? So
is there a sense then that when a marketer who's under pressure to deliver for his company or her company sees a huge upswing in investment in, I don't know, TikTok, Amazon, whoever it might be, do you sense a pressure then that they sort of feel, well, that's where we should be spending our money as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously case by case, right? But there's no doubt that some of the channels we're talking about are kind of easier to measure and show kind of direct uplift and cost per lead and cost per click. And you can, on a daily perspective, be sending reports back to your CFO to say, look, the money we're putting in is generating something positive back for the business. And our job as the agency is to remind them of the bigger picture and the lasting impact of the channels that they need to invest in as well. So I think, yeah, it definitely, you feel that pressure coming. And depending on the category and the client, it can be more pronounced than others, for sure. But I do think COVID taught us that we're pretty good in the UK, actually. I think we did a better job. We weren't as knee-jerk as some people predicted. And I think a lot of the IPA work has held, actually. And you see that in the bellwether too, right? So you see clients saying, and CMOs saying, you know, they plan to invest and they want to continue to invest. But actually, interestingly, in the bellwether, you also see them mention the channels where they plan to invest more. And sometimes that is the digital space. It's too broad to get into the detail, but it does always raise a question with me of like, what digital? Is that BVOD or is it search? It could be either.
It's an interesting point. Matt, from a commercial television perspective in the UK, for instance, obviously, I think as you pointed out in your introduction there, the UK is not having a terribly brilliant time economically at the moment. And TV had a tough year last year as well, and so you have a sense then that when the city, when analysts see X digital platform increasing its revenue, 10% double digit growth every year, that puts a pressure on the likes of TV companies in a way that they maybe wouldn't feel otherwise, because actually the way they're performing is perhaps proportionate to the way that the economy at large is performing.
Yes, I think it would be nice to have a way in which you can create a fair benchmark, I suppose, to compare the performance so that we can understand the true health of the industry that we're really working in. So let's say, you know, if you could cut out the SME spend, I'm not in any way saying that that money doesn't count and it doesn't matter and it's not important, but it would be, if you could cut out that SME spend, and then you'd get a true picture of, well, you know, big brand spend, so the sort of brands that the media agencies, creative agencies are working with, and that we, when we report and all the reporting work that Walk do, we're generally talking about that kind of business, that kind of advertiser. And if we could look at what they're doing and how much they're spending and how that's changing, I think that would be a more useful set of data for us, because it would give a true reflection of what's going on in terms of overall spend trends and the relative role for TV or broadcast of VOD or print or radio and how that's changing over time.
So that's a case then of large scale advertisers benchmarking against their peers, for want of a better word, ideally within the category, but in general, you know.
Yeah, I think so, because it would be what was the data saying for this year? I think, was it saying 6% growth or something for advertising as a whole? It was around that mark. I think if you did it for big brands, I don't think it would be growth. I'm pretty sure you'd see a decline, because we're going through a pretty tough tough environment and marketing budgets are being cut. So I think it's almost like we've got this sort of false picture of what's really going on.
James, is there a danger that we're counting investment as advertising what is effectively the cost of doing business online? So things like search, things like retail media, there's increasing amounts of evidence, even for retail media, let alone for search, that if you stop spending in paid search terms, that's going to affect your performance. You know, things like the sort of digital tax effectively. Is there an argument for looking at that in a different bucket?
Yeah, I think there certainly is. And going back to an earlier point, you know, the more tools that we have at our disposal to understand the world that we operate in, you know, the better decision making will be. I think the interesting point about search and retail media being, you know, lower funnel, you know, you can call them costs or you could call them a tax on business, but they've always been there in a sense. So, you know, we know that globally, 90% of brands are drawing from existing sales and trade budgets to fund retail media activity. So that is money that has already been budgeted, but it's just being reassigned. Now, if you're looking at it from that perspective, should you then be comparing that money to main media budgets? Possibly not. There could be a case for better segmentation in that area. Ian Whittaker, an excellent analyst, after a man after my own heart, I know he often says that search advertising is akin to the old telephone directories. You know, it's a way of just businesses being found relatively easily. So if you are regarding it as a cost, it is a cost that has always been there. It's just the means has changed and has obviously become, you know, more sophisticated as first party data becomes more prevalent within these environments. So.
And more dominated by a single company in the world of search.
Quite. And I think that's a really important dynamic here. And I'd love to hear Jackie's opinion as a practitioner, because my understanding is that, you know, a brand would not come to their agency and say, I want a pre-roll ad on this content on YouTube. They would say, I want to reach this audience within Alphabet's ecosystem, right? Across display, YouTube and search. So you're interacting with the media owner who controls an ecosystem of a variety of formats, whereas perhaps historically you'd be interacting with a set industry, be that radio or whatever. So I think the my understanding would be that the dynamic is changing there, and perhaps the way that spend is measured isn't fully reflective of that changing dynamic.
So for us, like, if you keep it in two simple buckets, right, there's grow demand, harvest demand, and how you do those two things. There's obviously endless ways to grow demand for a brand, and loads of different ways you can harvest demand. No client ever says, please increase our search spend, I want to give Google loads more money. That's not what happens. you know, so it genuinely is a balancing act. And if anything, increasingly we hear from clients who want to be weaned off that insane, like, competitive marketplace around really expensive search terms for some categories. You know, your insurances, your travel at the right time of the year, they are really expensive battlegrounds to be activating in. And nobody wants to be overly invested. But there is a fear that if you're not at the table, then somebody else is going to rob your sales, right? So it really is, it is a really tricky one. And I think Alphabet have done a really good job as a company to really embed themselves within the right people internally in different large marketing organizations. You know, they have direct relationships and they know how to grow their business that way too. So it can be tricky. It can be sometimes that we're dealing with a team that actually don't look after the paid above the line total budget. They may have one pot that's going to performance marketing. They may have one pot that's going to that harvest, you know, grow demand piece, and they may not be the same people. And then how do we infiltrate that budget? How do we control that back? It can be really, really tricky. There isn't a pattern that's consistent. You know, there's every client setup will be slightly different. Every category will operate in different ways. So I think it isn't needed in many industries and many examples. The scale of it is the challenge, I think. The scale and the overinvestment in those expensive key terms is the problem that I have.
You mentioned type of advertisement. I think that's an interesting point as well. You know, we're not necessarily, when we're talking about big brands, we're not just purely talking about the sort of Procter & Gamble's, Unilever's and Nestle's of this world. We're also talking about some of the really big digitally native, for probably want of a better phrase, digital born brands that have come up and have scaled and are doing things slightly differently from some of the brands that you would have seen in the sort of top 100 advertisers 20 years ago. Are you seeing a huge divergence between those different types of clients, Jackie, and the way that they look at the media market?
Absolutely. You know, this is where, like, I think TikTok have done another good job. Like, they have a lot of new direct-to-consumer companies will just go direct to TikTok now. And, you know, TikTok for younger generations is actually search as well as content. The whole everything just happens within that ecosystem. So if you have a product you can sell in the TikTok shop at a young audience, giving them your marketing budget will return for you and arguably will engage the right consumers as well. So things are changing in that space. And I think it's just understanding the category dynamics for your own marketing budget, for your own category you're operating in, and making sure you're taking advantage of the right decisions to generate effectiveness for you. But yeah, the rules are changing slightly within that world, and shoppable commerce and that whole massive growth has changed behavior, right? Like, the literally consumer behavior has changed as a result of it.
On the flip side, so that's the brand perspective, then the other side is the media ecosystem and the health of the media ecosystem. And Matt, something that Thinkbox has recently articulated quite well is the importance of context and media quality to advertising effectiveness. But you have pointed out there that spend with the types of media owners who are actually producing professional, high quality, and often regulated content are the ones that are suffering in this two-speed market. Is that something that you think that a change in methodology to the sort of work that James is doing would help to emphasize to brands the impact of their investments and their impact on the media landscape?
Yeah, I think it would make it clearer. So the and again, there's very similar analysis that Walk have done. I saw it from sort of David Tiltman reporting on it, and I've looked at it in a similar way. Just again, as a percentage of GDP. So if you look at the investment in media that basically invest themselves in creating the content and creating an environment that is optimal for advertising. So it's the old model. You create content that draws people, and then you fund that content through the surrounding advertising. And if you look at the investment of those companies as a percentage of GDP over the last 10 or so years, it's gone from like 1% of GDP down to 0.4%. It's a really sad and scary looking set of data. And then you see the investment in the businesses that don't actually invest in content. They're just They're creating platforms, and they are creating content in a sense like YouTube. You know, it does pay the creators, so there is to be fair to YouTube, there is investment going into that creation of content, but it's not quite in the same sense. Today, I think it's really the print sector that's borne the brunt of that change that we've seen, and you worry what impact that has on the future for high quality journalism, and it's such an important discipline for our democracies to invest in that kind of space. And again, from a content point of view, I think it's really important that we can have access to free content that's funded by advertising. Otherwise, we go into this subscription only world, and it would be very two tier and very very sad. So I think it's to a certain degree, I don't expect that advertisers to make investment decisions based on what's morally important to them. But I'd like them to make the right decisions on effectiveness and also feel good about that investment in terms of what it does for society. I think, you know, having more visibility on this kind of data is good. It's like when you look at any kind of issue that is important, you've got to track it, haven't you? You've got to measure it. You've got to look at it, and you've got to see it. So I think it would be really good to have more visibility over that kind of data.
Mm. We work closely with Teads on and Lumen on our attention program, and by far and away, the content that has the highest attention across the majority of audiences is news content, and then there's this kind of other jeopardy on it, which is with world events the way they are, advertisers don't want to be in news content at the moment. So you have this audience effectiveness opportunity compounded by the fact that the context isn't as desirable as it possibly once was for advertisers, which obviously for publishers is less than ideal. And I think that in the future, that could become an even bigger problem, obviously both politically and for, freedom of the right news, but also, will these survive? Will the future of publishers survive without that income?
And Matt, I think, and correct me if I'm putting two and two together and getting five here, but I do sense an increasing solidarity between previously disparate parts of that world of professionally produced high quality content kind of coming together. With Thinkbox, we've seen Netflix and others becoming associate members now and joining the sort of the traditional, I guess, broadcast TV companies and aligning behind a similar message. And do you think that's a sign of the times that actually those kinds of media companies have more in common than they have apart in a way that maybe wasn't the case 2 or 3 years ago?
100%. I think it's about standards, and it's about setting the bar in terms of expectations. So the critical thing from our point of view when speaking to the likes of Amazon and Netflix, when we were talking about them becoming a part of Thinkbox, obviously what they do is TV, and they you can't distinguish a 30-second spot that's going out in Stranger Things from a 30-second spot that's going out in Bake Off. It's spot advertising, TV advertising in a high quality environment. What mattered to us though in our conversation was, are you clearing your ads? How do you clear your ads? Have you spoken to Clearcast? What are your rules around sort of the BCAT rules in terms of ensuring that advertising that isn't appropriate for kids is not going to be shown? And they've all got really, really strict, rigorous policies, because just purely from a point of view of their editorial teams, they don't want rubbish advertising. They don't want the experience from the user to be a bad one. And so they've put in place all of the kind of rigor that you'd expect from a sort of high quality TV business. And that matters from our point of view, because that kind of rigor creates an environment that delivers all these additional qualitative factors of advertising. So I know you had a podcast with Rich Kirk the other week, and you were talking about the signaling power of media, and the fact that you are seen to be advertising on TV sends a signal that therefore you must be a fit, a trustworthy, a credible brand. And that comes from this kind of mm-hmm. rigor of environment. So I think it's good that we get together and we promote that and we talk about those aspects, and that those aspects are valued and measured and considered in planning.
Yeah. I think they definitely are. I mean, like, that the future of how we stack our video is going to be increasingly into those channels. On the flip side, then, you know, Matt, we've talked before about CTV and the opportunities there. And I think it's an interesting dynamic. You've got like this really high quality content coming from your Amazon Primes, your Netflix, etc. And then you have a different type of content that's more accessible potentially, but coming from your CTV providers. There will be an accessibility to those entry points into the market that's easier for smaller brands to access now through CTV. They might not be able to afford an Netflix spot just yet. But actually, you know, there's a different type of way of running that inventory too. So like there are display formats in there. So I think it's getting, with all of these opportunities, there's an increased complexity and a murkiness too. So suddenly you have a display format on a TV big screen. What do you classify that as? Is it TV? Is it display? I mean, like, to be debated, you know, but at least it's not in search, right? So like, I don't know. It's like, what's the lesser of two evils?
That's probably one of the most interesting propositions from a CTV point of view, is that this sort of display space. I think it tends to be bought by other broadcasters. So if you're the BBC, you know, it makes sense for you to promote your next show by buying sort of display on TVs when they're in between being watched for content. What I would say, though, is, and if you look at the US market from their sort of growing CTV marketplace, it's a bit messy, and it's getting a bit long tail, and it's getting a bit programmatic. Mm-hmm. And with exactly. that comes all the problems of the exactly. programmatic world in terms of fraud and sort of viewability and what quality are you getting. And I'd hate for the UK to go into that place. Now, like the UK, the CTV market is outside of the broadcasters and YouTube and the SVOD players, is tiny. It's less than 0.1% of viewing. It's pretty non-existent. But that doesn't mean that there aren't necessarily going to be bad actors who are selling a sort of TV programmatic sale and bundling in there a load of stuff that they class as TV, but it's probably YouTube, or it's something that's different to TV. And I think we've got to keep an eye on that. Mm-hmm.
James, I'm going to put you on the spot. A display ad shown in a pause screen on a fast channel, TV or not TV?
Yeah, you've just outlined one of the many headaches that I have to look forward to in the future. I think one interesting point. I have a personal bugbear about the term CTV because in when it's used in relation to an advertising format, for me it's a device in the same way that mobile and tablets are devices. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Jackie, but I suspect the brands very rarely specify that they want their ad to appear on a mobile only. They just want it to be on the best available screen, if I'm not mistaken. So I think few people would specify a CTV ad, but more, you know, kind of appearing alongside certain content that aligns with brand values and fits well within the mix. So I have a strong hunch that we will not actually be talking about CTV in 5-10 years time. It will just be television. And it will be how inventory is traded, with all the benefits of that targeting, as long as we avoid the pitfalls of programmatic, some of the pitfalls of programmatic.
I think that the targeting piece for sure is going to be like the future. I think, as Matt mentioned, the context on what type of content your ad is shown in will become increasingly be like challenging, because it could be on a TV set, but it could be that you're streaming anything, right? So I think that's where we need to keep close attention from a planning perspective into like apples and oranges, literally. Like, you know, if someone is trying to drive a lasting effect for their brand, that the quality content that it shows up in has an impact. It's not just about the device and the TV set itself. So I think we'll have to pull those things apart in the future, for sure. The other thing with targeting that's interesting is, like, obviously within that space, the growth in things like, you know, Bunkers, InfoSum, all that world, you know, I have a worry that as you get more pointed and you can get closer to the mindset somebody's in and your exact customers, will that start impacting like the creative choices you make on TV? Because it's very easy to get into a very logical, price-pointed, actionable world when you know somebody is quite close to market, because you have that capability. So suddenly you stop using TV as a brand building channel and start using it as a activation channel. And I have a little worry that that could be where the future goes if we don't manage the conversations properly with our clients.
Well, I think we've really nicely articulated the challenge and how actually something that initially seems to be more about definitions really plugs into the effectiveness debate. Matt, James, I'll throw this open particularly to you both. What would you like to see next? How do we move forward as an industry and in the way that we're measuring media?
As we were sort of talking about before, I think capturing spend of big brands sort of accurately over time would be an ideal accompaniment to the total spend. And I'm not saying, you know, get rid of what we're currently doing. I think that's still important to count every single penny and report every single penny. But alongside that, it'd be brilliant to have a data set that's based on big brands. So could the major agency holding groups agree to share that, share their data in a way that it gets collated confidentially? And it reports back on big brand spend trends. You could do it by category. You could. I think there's data out there already, isn't it? Is it SMI, the company that are doing that that type of analysis? But I think there is data out there that's being collected, and it would be great if we could make that public.
Yeah. So from my perspective, going back to my initial point as a researcher, I want to count every penny. I want to understand our industry in as great detail as possible. And I think the most important for me as I produce something like the expenditure report is to make sure that the data that we are publishing is most reflective of the dynamics within our market and the way that advertising inventory is traded. Because ultimately it's the media owners and the agencies et al. Who use the data who are feeding it to their strategic models. So I want to make sure that everything that we're publishing is facilitating that need. And I think to Matt's point, the segmentation of, you know, brand and whole co-activity from perhaps what could be considered as a longer tail would make perfect sense, really, as a different lens over that industry. So I think that would be a very good starting point.
Come on, Jackie, have us in, aren't they? You don't mind, you'd show your data.
Oh, yeah, I'll make the Excel myself. I'll gather all that data for you, no problem, Matt. It won't be tedious at all. Fine.
We've cracked it. We've solved it. Okay. Listen, I'm so interested in this debate, and I think there's a lot of directions that we can take this, and I'd love to keep in touch with you all on how we move this forward. But in the meantime, that's all I'm afraid we have time for. So thank you, Jackie. Thank you, James, and thank you, Matt, for joining us. If you'd like to hear a little bit more about some of the Advertising Association Walk expenditure report figures that we've been discussing, then head on over to walk.com and you'll find more there. And if you like what you've heard more generally, just please do give us a follow on your favourite podcasting platform. And you know what? If you really liked it, go on and leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening.